of psychology and pop culture had a baby, they'd call it Shrink Tank.
A new paper reveals more intelligent people are quicker to learn and unlearn.
90% chance that there's some like weird animal out there.
Yeah. Howard Stern's been doing this forever. And far more extreme.
From Nashville and Charlotte, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Welcome, everybody. I'm Dave Verhagen here in Nashville. Thanks for joining us. We've got a great show today. We're going to talk about Black Mirror in our second segment. But first up, let's meet our Charlotte panel. Hello, Emma Kate Wright.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Has this new year been good so far for you?
So far, so good. I'm really wanting it to snow. We haven't had any snow yet, and I would like for that to occur.
Well, by the time people hear this, several people on the East Coast will have definitely gotten some snow, like blizzard snow. So for sure. And Dr. Frank Gaskell is here. Frank, how are you?
Guess what, David?
Tell me.
It's my birthday today.
Is it really?
It is January 11th.
Happy birthday, Frankie.
Yep. My gift to you is just my presence.
That's my gift to you. My presence. Remotely.
Yeah.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
And you're turning 85.
42.
Now, how old are you? Is this the last year of your 40s?
I'm 40. I'm 49.
Okay.
Wow. All right, Dave.
With that kind of energy, are you going to make it to the big 50? We didn't mean to stroke you out on your 49th birthday.
Happy 49th, Frank.
Thank you.
We'll do something very fun for your 50th.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. That's good.
Well, Jonathan Hederle is also here. He's our certified Asian who rounds out the panel. And each week, Jonathan trolls the internets and the world wide webs to find a great story of psychology in the news for the first segment that we call
Being Human.
So in 2018, this year, problems related to video games will now receive their own designation. The World Health Organization plans to include gaming disorder in their Diagnostic Manual, the International Classification of Diseases. This will happen in their next release, and gaming disorder will be classified under disorders due to addictive behaviors, and it will join gambling disorder as the only other condition under that heading. Frank, do you support the World Health Organization's decision?
I am conflicted, because I have sent two kids to residential treatment for literally the sole purpose of being addicted to video games. And their behavior is just like that of a drug addict or an alcoholic. And it's, you know, sneaking, and it took the place of so many other activities this kid was involved in. And I knew it was an addiction. But like, I feel like most anything can be an addiction. And so we're like, okay, you're addicted to drugs, you're addicted to this, let's just say you have an addiction and fill in the blank to whatever it is. Having all these categories is starting to drive me a little crazy.
Well, unless the way you treat one thing is different than the way you treat another. Like, the whole purpose of a diagnosis is to guide treatment. So if you would treat gambling differently than compulsive gaming, then maybe it does make sense to break it out. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if there would be a difference. I mean, you have to remove the gaming, and you basically change life habits. So I don't know how different the treatment would be.
Yeah, I do kind of wonder. I feel like we are moving towards a trend of pathologizing certain normal behaviors, so to speak. I will say, I guess I'm conflicted too, because I've heard several examples of kids who have been under very tight control by parents that when they go off to college, then all of a sudden they're locked in their dorm room and they are going hardcore on gaming.
Yep.
They're flunking out of school. They're not even eating. And so, you know, but is that really an addict? I mean, in the moment it could be if it's for a sufficient amount of time, but it's more or less like a parenting issue in that mm-hmm. perspective.
Right.
Well, Jonathan, you're the addiction specialist on the panel. So what's your take, honestly?
Well, I think there is such thing as addiction, although I think the term itself is so politicized and it can be easily misused. And one of the biggest outcomes, positive outcomes of this move is that hopefully it will spur a larger conversation around compulsive behavior and addiction. I think more and more people need to realize that diagnosing an addiction is just as much an art form as it is hard science. When you look at some of the kind of the criteria that somebody meets for addiction, and I really don't have a problem using like compulsive behavior. In fact, a lot of the clients that I work with, we choose to find other ways of designating or describing what's going on because addiction may be such a loaded term for them. But the other thing that I think over time has really warped our society when they think about addiction is that they see it as this sort of out that absolves them from personal responsibility or choice in the matter. And that's something that I really emphasize with my clients is that you still have power and choice in here. And so this doesn't absolve you. You know, if you're an alcoholic and you drive under the influence and you crash, you're not absolved of the actions of what happened. We just might have greater understanding of what's going on and what you need to get well, to get better, to be able to be a functioning member of society. So I'm hoping that this will lead to further research. I hope that it will lead to a larger conversation on compulsive behavior and addiction. And hopefully those that have this problem can get treatment that doesn't cost a fortune from their family.
Well, here's my question, though. Why this in particular? Like, why gaming? Because we have seen that. We've seen people who have gaming addictions, in quotes, or compulsive gaming. But why not internet, broadly speaking, internet addiction? Or why not porn addiction? Or why not spending or eating compulsive?
Right.
You know, like, why is it just gambling and video gaming? Like, why are those the two that we accept? And there are these other, what have been called in the past, process addictions. They're not chemical or substance addictions. They're behavioral patterns. I really wonder what the politics of that is. Like, why this?
Well, there certainly is politics behind it. In some of the articles that I've read, people are suspicious about the World Health Organization and China and Asia's prominence in shaping the ICD. One of the things that I think there's even dispute about the gaming disorder is how much research there actually is to look at, which I think for gambling, I think there's more robust research to be able to classify that as a disorder. I think one of the other things that maybe gaming and gambling in particular versus like internet or sex or food addiction that might differentiate it is those are two categories that you could make, I think, a strong and concrete argument to completely abstain in your life, where in terms of treatment and stuff, like food addiction, you need to eat to survive. And in terms of sex addiction, if it really is about intimacy and connection with other people, you need connection with other people to live a meaningful life. And so there may be some distinction of targeting these disorders or problems that maybe they are trying to come up with a pure abstinence-only remedy for it. But there's a lot more questions that this has provoked than answers that they're giving us.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's move on to our second segment. The trending topic today is the Netflix show Black Mirror. And Black Mirror is a trippy show. If you haven't seen it, you probably need to check out a couple episodes. It is not for everybody's taste, but it is definitely worth talking about. So I want to ask, Jonathan, I'll ask you first. How would you describe Black Mirror as a series to someone who didn't know about it?
I've read this over time, so I'm not going to claim that this is original, but I approach it as if The Twilight Zone and Tales from the Crypt were kind of merged together, and I don't have an equivalent for the sci-fi aspect, but it really, the tone, it's an anthology, and the tone is very suspenseful. And it gets under your skin, and it's one of the few shows that I cannot binge watch because it's just too heavy. Even though they're on the screen, there's not a lot that necessarily happens. It's just what it leaves you with pondering.
I cannot binge it, and recently I'm only two episodes in, but I watched both episodes in one morning, and by the end of it, my palms were sweating. I felt just horrible, just really, really upset. But it's definitely today's Twilight Zone.
Different than most days, though, right?
Yeah. Right. It's sort of if HBO made the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, that's kind of true. How would you describe it, Emma-Kate?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, each of these vignettes with the different directors and whatnot is kind of their own take on, you know, these very true issues or potential issues with technology. And it is disturbing when you're like, wow, okay, like that could happen. And like, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of this, but, you know, at least one episode from season four felt much more grounded in terms of it could be very realistic versus, you know, another one was more sci-fi-y. And so it's just, it's varied.
Yeah. So pick an episode and tell us a little bit about it, like what the basic idea of the episode and how it kind of hit you, Frank.
Well, it was the very first episode, and I didn't really know what to expect. It drew me in because it's sort of a Star Trek theme, and the acting was very much like a Star Trek episode. And essentially, the idea behind this is there is a virtual world that this computer founder created, but he has his own private world, and he's able to take the DNA of people he doesn't like and replicate them in his video game, but not just replicate, like it's the person with all their memories just showing up, and it messed with my head big time. But essentially it's a story of revenge on two ways, but I don't even put words to it. It made me feel really sick. And there's one moment where there's a monster on this planet, and the monster's getting ready to kill everybody, but the guy who's in charge of the game has to take a phone call, so he goes away. And the monster just sits down, and the character's like, hey, how's it going? He had turned somebody into a monster.
Yeah, they're like, hey, Janet, yeah, how
hey,
you doing?
Hey, Jan, how you doing? The monster's like, But you're there for infinity, and you cannot die unless he kills you. And he never kills anybody.
And he can bring you back because he has your DNA.
Over and over, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Emma-Kate, how about you?
Yeah, I know the episode Frank is talking about is USS Callister, I think, which I really enjoyed because it was very dark, but yet there were some laugh out loud moments as well. I also liked the episode Archangel, which in a nutshell, it starts off with this mom. She loses her child while out on the playground, so she ends up getting a chip implanted in her child to track her, but it's more than just tracking where she is. It allows her to see her vitals, and it allows her to see through her eyes. And so we kind of get into a lot of interesting gray area with parenting and failure to let go, to let your child be able to thrive independently, to experience failures and hardships and learn from them, but rather you can't, because what happens when anytime the little girl's heart rate and cortisol goes up for stress response, her vision, whatever she sees, becomes pixelated. And just as a quick spoiler, so she didn't know what blood looked like, and she ended up actually stabbing herself with a pencil, and she couldn't even see her own blood because it was being protected from her. So it's just super, it's creepy stuff.
That episode felt less sci-fi and more of the moment, like
right.
Just sort of like an allegory or, you know, something about our time with overprotective parenting.
Yeah, I actually want to ask about that theme of it being of the moment, but I'll do that in a bit. Jonathan, how about you? Any episode to comment on?
Well,
I haven't seen the two.
Okay, I will talk about Hang the DJ, which is probably one of the more kind of optimistic and happy ending type of episodes, which are few and far between with Black Mirror. But at the same time, it presents a premise about dating and finding true love in a manner that is just as kind of twisted as the film The Lobster. in terms of using technology and other all these other like dating apps or advancements to try to find the perfect one, and how you go about finding the person you're meant to connect with. And I thought that again, it's probably speaking on our times and how we over rely on online dating services and other things versus developing real life human interaction and connection to find who we want to be with.
You rely on online dating resources?
Yeah, you know.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah. All right. Everybody's got to have a plan B.
You just announced that to everybody.
It's Jonathan's plan B.
Yeah.
I'm going to read a quote from the creator of the series, Charlie Brooker. He said, "If technology is a drug and it does feel like a drug, then what precisely are the side effects? This area between delight and discomfort is where Black Mirror, my new drama, is set. The Black Mirror of the title is the one you'll find on every wall, on every desk, in the palm of every hand, the cold, shiny screen of a TV, a monitor, a smartphone." That's what he's seeing this show being about, is the side effects of technology, the dark side of technology. And every episode, to some degree, explores that. Do you guys, in the episodes that you have seen, do you see psychological themes that run through there in terms of how we interface with technology and the risks and the downsides of that? Anything that you want to comment on about that?
Wasn't that the theme of the very first episode of Black Mirror? That there was something about having an iPad or some telephone device, and they were living through that experience. But I can't remember. But I feel like yes to what you're saying. You have to think about it, and it stirs up something inside you that's very uncomfortable.
Well, right, and you have to wonder. I think one of the themes that I thought about, especially with the USS Callister one, is how technology could very easily be misused. And so, you know, the guy that was the quote-unquote villain in that here, well, he was not quote-unquote, but he was the villain. He, you know, was the software developer. And so we are hoping that these technologies and whatnot are being used for good, but we don't know. So it's kind of scary.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I appreciate that quote from Charlie Brooker, but I really believe that he uses technology as the MacGuffin to really explore the human condition and how even something that's designed to bring convenience and greater good in our lives, there's always going to be both this temptation and the inevitability that humans will find a way to corrupt it in some fashion. So, you know, online dating, you know, the desire to protect your kid, you overuse it now, and then you've taken away free will and choice and autonomy from kids. The idea of dating and finding your romantic partner, you rely on that so much that you miss the cues right in front of you that you're making a connection with another person. So, and that's why sometimes the episodes, even though they introduce a lot of cool concepts with technology, the episode doesn't focus on that piece of technology itself. It unspoils. I mean, it sort of looks at the ripple effect of how that impacts people's lives and the choices that they make around it.
I don't want to do virtual reality anymore.
Because I think he has a very – when it comes to technology, I think Brooker has a pretty cynical view of humanity's capability to use it.
I'm with him on it.
You know, and I think Archangel is like the epitome of that. You know, that whole episode is about something that's meant to be good, but can a mother use her free will and choice to not engage in something she has the power and capability to do so? And we see how she epically struggles, and then the ramifications of that.
Yeah, so it is about technology, but it's really about humans and the human condition and relationships, and how our nature can take something that's good and powerful, potentially like certain forms of technology, and really he carries them to an extreme future point of where this could go. So it's kind of...
Go ahead, sorry.
It's sort of a prophetic voice in a way.
You know, I mean, most of us here have given talks at schools about technology, and a lot of times when people ask us, is technology good or bad? You know, Dave, you've used the illustration. It's like fire. It's kind of how you use it. It's it has the potential for really cool and great things, and it has the potential to be misused.
Burn your house down.
But Brooker's decided to make a anthology series of just the bad, you know, and not focus on the good, which I think is entirely appropriate because he has such creative ways that he's provoking the audience to think about our relationship or over-dependence on technology.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting that we're doing this on the same episode where we talked about gaming addiction being added to the classification of diseases. And so when he's looking at technology, he's really taking this idea of here's technology, whether the intention was good or not, the human condition is such that we're going to take it into its inevitable bad spot. And so you said like that one episode is very of the moment. In a sense, you could argue that all of it's of the moment. Is that kind of your take, is that in a way this is really, it's set in a either near future or a parallel reality, but it's really about now in a sense. Even though these things aren't specifically happening now, the themes and the seeds of it are happening now. Would you agree with that?
I would. I would argue that Brooker chooses to set them in what feels like the near future or someplace remotely different, so the audience can have more of a detached perspective of it. And I think it's easier to critique then the flaws of the characters in each episode than if he was just doing straight up commentary on 2017, 2018.
Yeah, whatever Hederly just said, I agree with that. That sounds pretty good.
Sounded pretty good. So Frank, I want to ask you, as our resident neurotic person, when you watched the first two episodes and you got all sweaty, did it make you say, I'm done, or did you want to watch more?
Oh, I definitely want to watch more.
Okay.
But I need a little break.
So, yeah. So I want to ask about that. Like Jonathan said, I'm not going to binge it. You said, I got all sweaty, but I'm going to watch more. It's like it is a hard show in some ways, but what's the appeal of it? Like, why watch this show?
Part of it is nostalgia, because I feel as if I am watching The Twilight Zone again. And I like sort of the mystery, where's this going to go, what's happening, the meaning behind it feels very Twilight Zone-y, and I love The Twilight Zone. But I'll tell you, even with The Twilight Zone, I get this emotion when you hear the Rod Serling and his voice. I get that same feeling when I see the Black Mirror opening, and I start to get anxious immediately, thinking, "Oh gosh, what is going to happen?" In episode two, when the woman is on the table, giving birth, I could hardly take it. I could like, is a monster baby going to come out? Is the baby going to be dead? And even just from that point, I was losing it.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking something along the same lines, too, where I was like, okay, this child is going to be a robot and blah, blah, blah. And so you just never really know what the direction the show, that particular episode, is going to go.
And I would argue, like, both this season and just as a show, because it's designed as an anthology and each episode, you know, is a singular storyline, there are definitely highs and lows of episodes and themes or how nuanced or over the top it can be. But that's part of the appeal of it. It's like you see a really creative or tense episode, you want to see what else Brooker can do. And then if there's one that you're kind of underwhelmed by and if it just felt like it didn't stick the landing, you kind of know like, well, that was an outlier. You know, what's the next episode going to be like? And so even though I can't binge it because I find myself after the episode is done, I'm still thinking about something in the first 5 or 10 minutes of the episode. You know, I'm replaying all these things and threading all of the points together to where it just sticks with me for a while. I'm not ready to jump into a new universe, a new storyline. I want to kind of ruminate on the episode I just watched.
Yeah, it is definitely something that sticks with you. You know, there's an episode from, I think it was, I can't remember what season, but San Junipero, the one that got Emmy nominated and so on. And actually, I think it won the Emmy.
Yeah.
And I watched it and I really did like it and I was moved by it, but I was thinking, like, you know, maybe it wasn't as good as everyone was saying, but doggone it, if I didn't think about that thing for a week later, you know, like it was on my mind and just got under my skin in a way that was very hard to describe. So, yeah, absolutely. There's something about it. So we would say recommended, not for everybody, but recommended with caution, and for the right people. Well, let's wrap this up with our final segment that we call
Doctor's Orders.
And these are things in pop culture that we're personally enjoying and we want to recommend to you. And Emma Kate, what do you have for us?
Well, I joked about this on the last episode, but I am 20 years behind. And I am just now watching The Sopranos on HBO. Dave, and it's so good.
Dave, I want to recommend MASH. There's this up-and-coming show.
I know.
I love Lucy.
But it's so good. And so I know that's kind of a throwaway recommendation if a lot of people have already seen this. But it really is just a great show.
You want to recommend the 90s.
Yes, basically.
That's great.
Frank, are you going to recommend Steve Urkel for us?
No. I am going to cautiously going to recommend, and I'm going to write an article on David Weir's new book, Artemis, which I have finished. And I dog-eared a lot of pages in it because this is a guy trying to write from a female's perspective and totally does not get it. I mean, does not get it at all. And he basically wrote a man. The math and the science behind the book is really good, but it does not hold a candle to The Martian. It really does not.
So is that a recommendation?
If you like puzzles and problem solving and mystery, yes. But if you're looking for good character development, forget it.
Got it. Jonathan.
Well, I have one recommendation and then just one shout out. I've been for the last couple of years watching this show called Banshee, which is on Cinemax, which kind of tells you the quality of it. But it's basically my treadmill show when I'm running on the treadmill. And our very own Sean Beck has, you know, a connection with the show. So I wanted to finish it up in honor of him. It's a really kind of trashy show. There's no better way of describing it, but it involves like Amish mafia. So there were certain premises I found really funny and outlandish. But when we did our best of the year, I talked about how underwhelmed I was about music this year. And recently I got an album that reminded me of why this year was so subpar. I actually got the 30th deluxe edition of INXS album Kick, which is one of the best albums of the 80s. I loved INXS. When I listened to that and I listened to the mainstream pop rock music that's hitting like the charts today, it just reminds me how, at least for me, this year was a little less than stellar year in music. So recommend INXS 30th edition, deluxe edition of Kick.
I will tell you, I also have a weird connection to Banshee, and that is that my oldest daughter worked for a reptile museum that provided all the snakes for the show.
Well, there you go. My daughter, her friend's family were extras. They would go and be extras on Banshee. So there's all these connections, and I'm just like watching this. I'm going, this is really bad, but I keep watching it.
My recommendation is a movie that I just saw recently, but it has moved into my top five of movies for the year, called Lady Bird. And it is a terrific movie about a high school senior, a girl who has named herself Lady Bird. That's not her given name. And Saoirse Ronan plays the title character. She's terrific. Laurie Metcalf, look for an Oscar nomination for her as her mom, is fantastic. It feels very real and lived in. It's very funny. I'd highly recommend it. It's a great movie. One of my five favorite movies of the last year. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank Podcast. You can check out shrinktank.com for great articles and videos. And we want you to follow us on Twitter at shrink_tank and like us on Facebook. That'll keep you up to date. Our producer and music composer is Sean Beck. For Emma Kate Wright, Jonathan Hederle, and Frank Gaskell in Charlotte, I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville. Tell all your friends about us and make it a great week.